Blog Talk Radio.
Thrice the branded cat hath mewed, thrice and once the hedge pig whined. Harp here cries, tis time. Round about the cauldron go, in the poisoned entrails throw, toads that undercold stone, days and nights, has 31 sweltered venom sleeping got, boiled out first in the charmed pot. Double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, fillet of a fenny snake in the cauldron, boil and bake. Eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog. Adder's fork and blind worm sting, lizard leg and howlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth, boil and bubble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble, scale of a dragon, tooth of wolf, witch's mummy moan goof, of the raven salt sea shark, root of hemlock take in the dark, liver of blaspheming Jew, gall of goat and slips of ewe, silvered in the moon's eclipse. Tartar's lips, finger of a birth, strangled babe, ditch delivered by a trap, make the gruel thick and slab. Add thereto a tiger's cauldron, for the ingredients of our cauldron. Double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, cool it to a baboon's blood, and the charm is firm and good. Oh, well done, I command your pains, and every one shall share in their gains. And now about the cauldron sing, live elves and fairies in a ring, enchanting all the things you put in. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Open lock. Whoever knocks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to In Our Craft, Our Solemn Art. I am Pam Ray, filling in for Lauren Yvonne, who cannot be here tonight. And co-hosting with me, I have Fill My Eyes. We hope that you enjoy tonight's show, which this is the Late Night Poets Halloween Week, and tonight's topic is witches. If you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And when you get a chance, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Phil.
Well, hello, Pam. It's going all right. It's been a quiet day, and we got lots of great poetry on the board, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. And I want to wish Laurent a speedy recovery, and we're going to hold the fort down as best we can. You know, being the kind of girls that we are, we'll give it a whirl. Oh, that's one of our guests. Oh, my goodness gracious. She thinks this is funny, Pam. I don't know. Someone needs to talk to her.
I know. Must be some children approaching her candy-made, her candy house or something.
Yes, I bet she's saying yum, yum. Oh, you know, this crazy woman. So, yes, yes, I want to give a nod to William Shakespeare for this, for the wonderful intro tonight. You know, it just seemed perfectly fitting for a show about witches to put
it
that
really
up.
It really does. Yes.
You know, that's the way I see that. But, yeah, so anyway, I'm with you, whatever, however you want to start this off or you know, whatever you want to tell us about. I'm not sure where you're headed. So I'm going to be quiet and let you do your thing.
You know, it's a pretty simple, straightforward topic, although definitely an intriguing one. Lauren chose the topic and ran the contest, which I'm very thankful for, on witches. And, you know, witches actually have been a fascinating part of history because there's both the reality and the mythology of witches. Most infamous, of course, were the Salem witch trials. You know, but there was also for hundreds of years witch trials throughout Europe. And I don't know, it's just really interesting because, you know, he put up picture prompts. He put up, I think, a quote or two. And but just also kind of left it, I think, as we do with most shows, as, you know, as long as people write on the topic.
Right.
You know, and so it was interesting to see the different responses because we got, you know, everything from, you know, people writing about, you know, the idea that most people, especially women that were judged by witchcraft, were ones who were really the equivalent of medicine women. You know, they knew things about nature and herbs, you know, to help people, but were judged, you know, because their beliefs didn't line up with the religious beliefs of the time. And then, of course, you know, we got the response of the classic, you know, just kind of fun mythological approach to witches. Like you picture the witch with the on the riding on the broom with her black cat and, you know, the pointy hat. It's interesting. It really is. And so, yes, I'm definitely looking forward to tonight's show. And absolutely.
Absolutely.
So I figure I will start us out with a classic poem. And it is A Strange Pair by Rose Fileman. The witch that lives in the woods is not very pretty and not very good. Her face is brown and her eyes are black. A fierce old pussycat sits on her back with a sharp thin tail sticking up like a spire while her mistress crouches over the fire. Be the day cold or be the day hot, watching her strange little bubbling pot. The goblinly dwarf that lives on the hill, he lies in the heather so still, so still. But on dark nights when there ain't a moon, he puts on his cloak and his dancing shoon and runs along like a soft, shy mouse till he comes to the door of the witch's house. Ho, he cries, it is a junketing weather. And off they go on the spree together. Off they go on the tail of the wind. The great black pussycat sails behind. Haven't you heard them banging about? Haven't you heard them whistle and shout? Haven't you seen them now and again peering in the window pane? Oh, but I tell you, it's better to hide when the witch and the goblin are out for a ride. End poem. And you know, I chose one obviously because of the topic, and there were a few different ones on witches, but I felt like this one, because of its more storytelling element, you know, the rhyme and the flow and the way the poet brings the characters in, it has that, like I said, more that kind of witchy storytelling that, you know, you might gather around the fireplace or something near Halloween and this would be recited, you know, to scare the children. In fact, I had looked and there had been a couple of, like, two or three comments below it of people who had mentioned that they had remembered this poem from their childhood and how their either their parents or their grandparents would, you know, recite it to them near Halloween. And I thought, yeah, that makes sense. That seems like the kind of poem it would be. Now, me personally, this was the first time. When I found this today, it was the first time I had ever read it. But, you know, I think it's definitely one of those that is fun to bring out on a night like tonight. And
absolutely.
What do you think of it? Yeah, absolutely. What did you think?
I think this was a fabulous choice to start the show off with. A great choice on your part. I'm not quite sure how you found it, but you did a fine job with it. You know, the witch that lives in the wood is not very pretty and not very good. Her face is brown and her eyes are black. A fierce old pussycat sits on her back with a sharp, thin tail sticking up like a spire. Yes. I like it. I like the imagery in it. I like the that vibe it puts off, you know, about, this old witch, you know. Of course, you know, it's the stereotypical witch, you know, but I love it. Nicely done, Rose Fileman. And I know you've been waiting to hear me say that since you wrote this poem however long.
Absolutely. She's been waiting for the last 200 years.
That's right, darn it. She's been waiting, saying,
now,
I'm waiting for that Phil woman.
Can finally rest in peace.
Yes, exactly. Glad I could. It's Pam's fault. She found it, so you have to thank her, not me. But no, I do. I think it was good. I liked it a lot. And I did read the comments underneath. I thought that was so funny that, you know, someone's grandmother had read it to them when they were kids, and they said it frightened her half to death. And then, you know, someone says, well, my mom used to read this poem to me. I really thought she made it up. It's an amazing poem. And then there's somebody else who her granddad used to recite it to them. So I thought that was pretty pretty amazing, you know.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. It'd be interesting to find out if we actually have any listeners tonight that remember this from their childhood.
Honest to God, I think, yeah, it's a great piece. So good choice, Pam, good choice. Woo-hoo.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I lost.
You know, if I had known of this poem, I would have been reading it to my children and my nieces and nephews. My nieces and nephews, I used to read and recite at Edgar Allan Poe stories to them all the time.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's funny. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you don't raise them like they did, they used to, you know. Now it's like everybody's like, don't say that, you'll get them upset. Oh, God.
Yeah, like, you know, and really fairy tales and spooky stories have been a part of many cultures to both,
absolutely,
you know, entertain and to also offer up warning to children, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because the original Stranger Danger was that witch in the woods. Think about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's see. Cool aunt. My aunt used to give me those teenage magazines on how to put on makeup and talk to boys because I was already reading too much Poe. There you go.
Oh, that's funny. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I never found those teenage magazines of much use either. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Up next, we have Silently Screaming by Jacqueline H. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read for us.
Gotcha. Silently Screaming by Jacqueline H. Oh, gosh. Okay, here we go. Sorry about that. Silently screaming, we witches see the pain of others we try to free. Persecution and trail of flames, sport to some, those fearsome games. But lift the mask, what lies beneath a quiet soul may be filled with grief. For mothers, sisters slain before, when men afeared knocked on their door. a crone, a hag, demonic soul, she'll try to heal and make you whole. At one with nature, laid by trees, amongst the grasses, flowers, reeds. Leaf of fever few, garlic root, easing guts, she's wise, astute. Comes to aid the sick of mind, gather the bounty others leave behind. We always fear what we don't know, but start to talk, take time to slow. To understand through others' eyes, to see a world without disguise. Appreciate the simple things, the gentle relief that knowing brings. Look in the face of those called witch, allowing her healing to life enrich. End poem.
Great Ooh. Read there, Dean. And what an absolutely brilliant write. This is one of those that reflects on the idea that I was talking about before, that a lot of so-called witches were really just women or people who had knowledge about, you know, the healing properties of nature. And I like the rhyme and flow in this, the imagery and the attention to detail, like the fact that she named specifically feverfew and garlic root, both are which are known for their medicinal property. And, you know, I just really thought this was had thoughtful lines looking into the true heart of a woman who has a deep understanding of nature and the spirit realm and the way that we judge that which we don't understand. And it was great all the way through, but I do especially like where she brings it also, the lines, we always fear what we don't know, but start to talk, take time to slow, to understand through other eyes, to see a world without disguise. I mean, that whole stanza is great, but the idea of, you know, opening up your eyes and taking time to really observe rather than jumping to a quick judgment, I think is especially thoughtful. So excellent write and very well done. And what did you think, Jean?
Ah, I really like this poem all the way through. I let me see now. Is this the one? I don't know. I liked all three of the stanzas very much. I'm trying to think of which one I like better, you know. The first one puts it in perspective, you know. You know, silently screaming, we witches see the pain of others we try to free. Persecution, a trail of flames, sport to some those fearsome games. But lift the mask, what lies beneath, a quiet soul may be filled with grief. For mother's sister slain before, when men afeared knock on the door. And that really was it, you know, the people were so afraid way back when they were burning people, hanging people, drowning people, you know, all because they just didn't understand that someone, you know, had the intelligence to maybe heal someone or, you know, what have you. They just made them into such horrible people, which isn't true. And the second stanza, I thought really, you know, pointed to that the reality of them healing and helping people. You know, they just took different unconventional methods at the time. You know, people didn't know what to make of that. But I did grab up the last stanza to put on the on my comment because I thought that that was another great piece. We always fear what we don't know, but start to talk, take time to slow. To understand through others' eyes, to see a world without disguise. Appreciate the simple things, the gentle relief that knowing brings. Look in the face of those called witch, allowing her healing to life enrich. Allow her healing to life enrich. I thought that was great. You know, it's like, get past the rest of this and, you know, relax and let someone help you, you know. I think it was just a great piece all the way through. I liked the rhyme. I liked the meter. I liked, you know, the thoughts. Yeah, it was very well done. So thank you, Jacqueline H. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like you. I really hope to see more of Jacqueline H. again. You know?
Right.
Great
Absolutely.
Writing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And up next, we have Hepzibah by Joe Braz.
Okay.
Children stay away from the swamp, It is Hepzibah, the Wicked Witch's Backyard and Nursery for Roots of Sassafras, Whorehound, Licorice, Stinging Nettles, Wormwood, grown under exact conditions. So this witch is watchful and protective of her garden of horrors. Her witchy pantry is arranged alphabetically with the ingredients like newt eyes, raven pin feathers, gut of badger, peacock tongues, cat tails, and oil of human children. Wicked Hepzibah squeezes the children in the press she's designed for this gruesome and painful process. Children are kept in a pit in her kitchen, chained to the wall, spread eagle. They are fed nothing but greasy bones of crows, which were boiled whole to make broth, the base to many witchy potions and concoctions. As the children fall weaker, they cannot fight as Hepzibah runs their hands and arms through the press. This was done to the children four times, each run tighter, pressure squeezed, so by the fourth run, the arms are only strands of limp flesh and bits of smashed bone. But Hepzibah isn't finished. Her victim's feet and legs are pressed in the same cruel torture. When each child is reduced to a torso and head, it was the final and highest yield pressing. It squeezes from the base of the torso through the head, extracting the sought-after oil of child's final press. Then she dries the spent children and uses them for area rugs and windows and window and furniture covers. Some say if you see her, you will not see your family again. She mesmerizes you with one glance and uses no effort, snatches you and throws you down into her pit of death. End poem. And Jean, your thoughts.
What a creative piece. Honest to heavens, yep. You know, how many times you hear witches, you know, stealing children away and what have you, but I don't think I've ever heard of them being pressed for oil. And I think that is just, it was like, ooh, you know, first the arms and I'm going, oh, and then he says, oh, the legs and the feet. But then he got to the body and I'm going, you know. I mean, really, where is it? I'm looking for that spot. When each child is reduced to a torso and head, it was the final and highest yield pressing. Oof, it squeezes from the base of the torso through the head, extracting the sought-after oil of child final press. Then she dries the spent children and uses them for area rugs and window and furniture coverings. I went, oh my. Yes. And all I could envision was this room with flat children laying on the floor, you know, as rugs. I went, oh my goodness. Yeah, it did give a good visual there. So it was very clever. And I thought it was very creative. So great job, Joe. Let's see. Some say if you see her, you will not see your family again. She mesmerizes you with one glance and uses no effort, snatches you and throws you down into her pit of death. Oof. Good Hepzibah. She a rough one. Rough one. I don't know.
Yeah. Hepzibah is definitely the classic definition of a wicked witch. And you're right, this right is very clever. I mean, you know, because we all know the classic stories like Hansel and Gretel and similar ones where, you know, we know the witches. Uh-oh, there she goes again.
Yeah,
we all know those classic stories like Hansel and Gretel where the children get kidnapped and then eaten. But, you know, to take this twist on it, which not only allows her a new idea with the witch, but allows for some really great dark and creepy storytelling. So I just thought this was great storytelling by Joe Braz.
Really?
And, you know, all the way through the visceral imagery, I mean, he really doesn't hold back on the darkness, and he does it in such a way, though, that it's delightfully creepy in its presentation,
yes.
You know?
Right.
This was done to the children four times, each run tighter, pressured, squeezed. So by the fourth run, the arms were only strands of limp flesh and bits of smashed bone, but Hepzibah isn't finished. So great right and very well done. And I happened to come across, I was looking at artwork and pictures, and I happened to come across that statue there in that garden that Laurent picks up as a mom.
Yes.
Well, it's actually the artist that did that has multiple statues that they've done of, like, goblins, witches, and other characters like that. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. There's a thought for next year.
You go. Hang on to that. You never know.
Hang on to that thought.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Good poem.
Yep, creepy. Yeah, Northern Phoenix says, yeah, that was creepy. Oil of children, LOL, disturbing. Yes, definitely. But, sometimes creepy and disturbing is just the right direction to go in. But I have to say, we do definitely have a great lineup of poetry tonight. And up next we have I Was a Witch by Rooster C. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read.
What are you trying to say, Pam? Okay, this is called I Was a Witch by Rooster C. And the prompt he chose was, in a world full of princesses, be a witch. Just a woman in a world of strife and poverty, my father, a burly woodsman, earned a poultry pittance, chopping down large trees. Mother, an old black wren, distressed fathers would send it for her if it became apparent. Their wives in labor, childbirth, no formality. Me, myself, a housemaid, cook, comb cleaner, for more established members of high society, but also a penchant, just as granny and before a blessed gift to cure the sick through simple use of plant extract, herbs, mixture, same, if not cured, ease suffering through natural remedy. Sometimes for services rendered, a luck penny, slipped into my palm, more oft not, just tea. Folk of the day, impoverished, though charitable in spirit, grateful to avoid a hefty doctor's fee. So with Grim Reaper rapping on window door, I'm happy to offer respite, humanity, my proclivity. Then came a nervousness, whispers of shady dealings, that my would-be healings, medicinal methodology, underpinned demonology. So said bishops, venerated, backed by King's soul fear, his religious advisors, threats of apocalyptic damnation, and souls will burn in fire if witchcraft not expunged, its practitioners incinerated. So thus began a rounding up of any wench or woman who merely sought to aid, help the smitten in recovery, with rumors rife of hocus pocus and like. A few unscathed soldiers rallied to calls from pious clergy. Bonfires made ready, and I, like many of my time, cruelly burned at the stake. Yet still today my righteous spirit speaks, damn them and their religious fate, religion fake. End poem.
Great read there, Jim. And I thought this was a wonderful write. Another one that really delves into the history of what it was like to be a woman who knew and understood the medicinal properties of nature and to be judged for that. And I think his opening line really sets the tone for the story, which is a story, but at the same time was the reality for so many people. And I say people, even though the majority was women, because there was on occasion men who were accused of witchcraft. But just a woman in a world of strife and poverty. That really, to me, sets the tone because, you know, in the era that you imagine that this is taking place in you know, like the 1600s or earlier, it was difficult to be a woman. I mean, it was even difficult to be a woman from a well-off or titled family, but at least you had some hope, you know. But to be a woman in a world of strife and poverty, there wasn't much opportunity or chance for you to grow or do anything. I like this all the way through, some great word choices, but I like his use of the word penchant, and where she says, or he says, but also a penchant just as Granny and before, a blessed gift to cure the sick through simple use of plant extracts, herbs, mixture of same. I thought, you know, that's really cool that he brings into this the idea that this knowledge is passed from generation to generation, and then where he brings in the underpinned demonology, so said Bishop, venerated, backed by King's soul fears, his religious advisors' threats of apocalyptic damnation, soul will burn in fire. You know, throughout time, throughout history, religion, unfortunately, has played many a part in wars and persecutions of people. I mean, you know, a lot of times when a king or queen came into power, those that were not of the same religion of them were often persecuted. And, you know, I found this one really interesting because, again, it looks at a cruel and harsh reality of judgment against people and hypocrisy. So excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Doggone. I thought it was a great piece. I really did. I thought that Rooster had done a fine job. A great piece, very well done, great description of the unjustly accused. Nice work. And I pulled this stanza, which seems... The standard doesn't really speak on witches, but it speaks of the time. Me, myself, a household housemaid, cook, comb cleaner, for more established members of society, but also a pension, just a granny and before, a blessed gift to cure the sick through simple use of plant extract, herbs, mixture of same. If not cured, ease suffering through natural remedy. Because really, you know, I mean... That it's such a bum deal, you know? I mean, to think what happened to women just because they tried to help other people. And that's it really, you know, that's what, well, I mean, women have that built-in thing to nurse, to take care of, to heal, to, you know, take care of the sick, the old, the young, you know, just to nurture. And, man, people paid the price for that, didn't they? They really did. But I think that he really spoke on them nicely there. So it's a great piece. So thank you, Rooster, for sharing with us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up that one part because, you're right. While it doesn't necessarily focus just on witches, it is a great reflection of that time period. So very cool.
To be punished for some things that are just so basic. You know, I don't know.
I know, right? I know.
Amazing.
I know. And, you know, to have to, you know, I mean, to continue with your beliefs and helping people, knowing full well that it could bring you to persecution and death, I think takes a great deal of courage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Up next we have I Sing This Ode by Captain Kerr. I sing this ode to Salem's witch without a stitch and on oaken pole they hung her soul. I loved her ever, we were small, than growing tall, I loved her more beside the moor. Her hair is black as raven tress and milky breast, with thighs as fine as barreled wine. We drank up sky and springtime green, near river stream, and with our feet blazed trails through wheat, and shared our love through winter freeze, when on our knees we made a vow by Stoughton's plow. Ah, she was lovely as the breeze, they killed with ease, with copper cup I dug her up. I watched her young flesh start to fill there on the hill beneath the moon in satin womb. Her eyes slow turned a lurid blue, and dark hair grew across her brow and shined like fowl. Her lips pursed full from pink to red, unlike the dead whose lips are white as sullen light. Her legs and arms detached and slim, slid limb by limb and reattached on wooden lath. I felt her bony fingers pull, her knuckles full up to my ear so I could hear. I heard her voice, a throaty moan, gut-wrenching groan, a weaving wind, delunged by sin. I held her firm and helped her stand, in trembling hand she breathed and cried, "A witch's sky!" Beyond the graveyard stood the town with barns of brown, where horses grazed in misty haze, and pasture smelt of oak and sow, of dung and cow, of stove and horn and rotting corn. I wasn't sure what I had done, the night sky young with shadows long, they did her wrong. She watched the parson enter church, oh what a thirst, with candlestick was bludgeoned quick. Her accursor, she found them out by their own mouth, removing tongues as they were hung. And so it went throughout the night in pale moonlight. I shudder still upon that hill where I heard her lips cast a spell, and Salem fell beneath the hood of Sarah Good. End poem. And I'm going to go ahead and read a little bit of his A.N., which says, Sarah Good was one of the first three women to be accused of witchcraft in the Salem witch trials, which occurred in 1692 in colonial Massachusetts. On July 29, 1692, Sarah Good was hanged along with four other women convicted of witchcraft. While the other four quietly awaited execution, Good firmly proclaimed her innocence. The Reverend Nicholas Noyes was persistent but unsuccessful in his attempt to force Good to confess. When she was found guilty by the judges, including Noyes, according to legend, she yelled to him, "I'm no more a witch than you are a wizard. If you take away my life, God will give you blood to drink." Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to read that because I thought it added some not only context to the poem at the using the word name Sarah Good, but also was just really interesting. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a great poem. I think it was, at first I didn't realize that there was any fact to it. You know, I thought it was just going into just a tale that someone had spun. But then as it started coming down to, to this part, you know, beyond the graveyard stood a town. I was still kind of on the fence about the story. But she watched a parson enter church. Oh, what a thirst. With candlestick, it was bludgeoned quick. Her accusers, she found them out by their own mouth, removing tongues as they were hung. And so it went throughout the night in pale moonlight. I shudder still upon that hill, where I heard her lips cast a spell, and Salem fell beneath the hood of Sarah Good. You know, it was that actually it was the last stanza where I went, oh, wait, there's a name here. And when I saw the name, I said, well, there's got to be some kind of truth or fact running here. And I thought it was nicely done. I liked the short lines and the four lines in each stanza. I thought it was a good way to present it. I like how the first line was longer excuse me. Good Lord, I don't know what the heck is up. I have to take a swift
shot. You sound like
something.
You need to be drinking some, like, you know, like hot water and honey and lemon juice or something.
I think the idea of drinking sounds really good. I'm not sure what I would lean on, you know.
Yeah, well, something needs to definitely be questioning that.
Yes, yes. Water isn't working, so I have to move on to something a little stronger, I guess. But this was, I don't know, I just thought this was really a good piece. You know, I like the story told from beginning to end. I thought it started out in a fashion that seemed very kind of light almost. And then it stepped up into the ending, you know, and made it come to life a little more, you know. And you and I get it because, you know, Pam, you and I hung together a long time ago, you know, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's it. So, but yeah, this
you and
really
I would have been the ones that would have been sassing off to the judges.
They would have had to stop and think twice about what we had to say because we'd have started, what's the word I want? We'd have been telling them all about it, and they'd be like, "Whoa, yeah, look out, we're gonna get
right.
you." Don't if you knock me down, you better hope I don't get up, because if I get up, you know, one of them deals. But no, it was a great great piece. So thank you, Captain Kerr.
Absolutely, yeah, I like what you had to say, and I think the great thing about this one is I do believe that, obviously, I think part of it is made up, like the fact, you
right.
know, that there's necromancy involved. But I like that the reality, like the story of Sarah Good was for Captain Kerr the springboard for telling this wonderful dark tale of necromancy and revenge. And I also like that you brought up the rhyme and how at the first line of each stanza is longer than the others. Now, I have to admit that usually I'm very neurotic if there's like a line that really stands out being too long, but
mm-hmm.
that's like if there's like one line in the middle of a poem and it's just like, you know,
yeah.
that, and that's me personally. Everybody's different, but
mm-hmm.
I actually like this because he keeps it consistent. It's consistently
right.
always the first line of every stanza is the longest one, you know, and
right.
that I think gives it a nice professional and polished look. But I also like, I really like the rhyme and flow in this. I like the imagery and how it gets progressively darker. It kind of builds up the tension. But the most interesting thing to me with this, right, is how it's a almost like a moral lesson. Like, because, you know, he says, the one character's voice says, or the character's voice says, "I loved her ever. We were small. Then growing tall, I loved her more beside the moor." And so you could see how this character, out of love, wants to bring their friend, their woman, you know, that wants to bring Sarah back because, you know, you want the one you love back with you. But then as it nears the end and you realize that Sarah has come back, but what she wants is revenge. She doesn't want to spend her days, you know, being in love, you know, milking cows or whatever, you know. She wants
yeah.
revenge, and with in the lines, "And so it went throughout the night, in pale moonlight, I shudder still upon that hill." You know, you see. Oh, and also in the lines, "With shadows long, they did her wrong," and I mean, all the way through in those last few stanzas, you really see through the character's eyes how. While their original intention was good and pure, they realized that the mistake they made in bringing the dead back to life. So absolutely just a clever write on the topic and very well done.
Nice.
And,
nice comment, Pam.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
can. Let's see what we have next. All right, we have If I Were a Witch by Teresa Strejnikoff. And go ahead, please, Jean.
Sorry, Pam. I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry. I guess If I Were a Witch by Teresa Strejnikoff. Sorry.
Yep.
I got distracted for a second. So, okay, let me give it a quick read. There you got it. Okay. If I Were a Witch by Teresa Strejnikoff. If I could be a witch just for one single night, I'll tell you what I'd do. I would make a special witchy brew and fly around on my witchy broom and play with all the kids. I would show them how to cast a spell only for protection and tell them not to tell. That would be our little secret for all of us to keep. Show them how to fly on my broom. I teach them how to turn a bully into a great big slimy frog, making sure they understand the spells aren't meant to be mean, to only make them finally seen, and taking back their dignity. End poem.
Oh, great read there, Jean. I like the concept of this poem and how she goes into the idea of wanting to use those witchy powers to help bullied children. It made me think of, there's this one episode, I don't know if you ever watched Supernatural, but there's this one episode of Supernatural where this boy named Todd gets like these major powers and uses them against bullies. And he's like, bow before Todd. And I don't know why, it made me think of that. And, but I like how she says, I would show them how to cast a spell only for protection. You know, I like that part because it kind of reminds me of why one of the reasons martial arts is important. Like I don't do martial arts. My kids never got into it, but like my aunt, she's a black belt. Her kids are all had gone through martial arts. And, you know, it's kind of that whole idea of, you know, you're not learning this stuff to be a violent and mean person. You know, you learn this stuff to be protective, you know, to be able to protect yourself if needed. And you know, also I think it helps to bring confidence, but I think a lot of stuff can bring confidence, you know, any thing that a child is interested in, you know, that you encourage. But I also like there's kind of a bit of humor in here in the lines. I teach them how to turn a bully into a green, big, slimy frog. You know, wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
I thought this was a good piece by Teresa. You know, but if I could be a witch just one single night, I'd tell you what I'd do. I would make a special witchy brew. You know, it just sounds like she decided she wanted to make a brew and fly on her broom and play with all the kids. And, you know, it sounded like she wanted to have a little bit of fun, you know, show them how to fly on my broom. I teach them how to turn a bully into a great big slimy frog. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny, but, you know, the spells aren't meant to be mean. They only make them finally seen and taking back their dignity. So I think that she's a witch of good intention. You know, she's going to show the kids how to stand up for themselves and, you know, make things change. So, you know, I kind of like that angle on it. So nicely done, Teresa, and thanks for sharing.
I like that, a witch of good intentions. Yeah, that sounds like it would make for a good definitely a good poem or a song or something like that.
Witch of good intention.
Yeah.
I think so. That sounds, yeah, it does sound kind of good, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I think so. Well, up next we have Swimming the Witch by Richard Wiseman. And we do have a recording for that, Jean, whenever you're ready.
You got it. Coming. And here it goes.
Swimming the Witch by Richard Wiseman. Hogtied with wiry, knotted rope, my long red locks like my life, cut short, bloodied, bruised, then gagged with oily rags, shoved, now dropped by unseen rough hands in the iced water of the River Thames. Their jagged rocks weigh my black sackcloth pockets. Slowly sinking to the bottom, the Lord knows my white words and deeds. But if I float, the buckle hats will jeer. Satan's concubine, a witch. Either way, I stand muted. Old claims to my dead husband's land and name, now stilled at the bottom of this watery grave. 'Twere I truly charmed, I'd curse their descendants till kingdom come. But these pale lips can only drink of the Savior's blood and hope for celestial rest. My drowned eyes ever fixed skyward. End of poem.
Great read and write there, Richard. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And I'm also going to read Richard's AN, which says, "Swimming a witch. Witch swimming was the practice of tying up and dunking the accused into a body of water to determine whether they sink or float. Sinking to the bottom indicated that the accused was innocent, while floating indicated a guilty verdict. Some Puritans wore buckle hats as a sign of wealth and status. Accusations of witchcraft were a common method of disinheriting childless propertied widows." And it's just fascinating stuff. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean, or do you have to step away?
I'm on mute. Jeez Louise.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm all out of whack again. I found it to be somewhat fascinating. I didn't know all the details of this. I knew there was something about witches in water and, you know, whatever. I just never had all the details. Yeah, I was the hanging one. I wasn't the sinking one. Well, I would have floated probably. I've been called. Well, then again, I might have sunk because, you know, it's just a change in letter. But I think that it was well done, and it was somewhat kind of informative. Sounds silly to say that, but it's informative as to what went on. You know, where is it? Bloodied, bruised, then gagged with oily rags, shoved, now dropped by unseen rough hands in iced waters in the River Thames. Their jagged rocks weigh my black sackcloth pockets, slowly sinking to the bottom. The Lord knows my white words and deeds, but if I float, the buckle hats will jeer. Satan's concubine, a witch. Either way, I stand muted. Old claims to my dead husband's land and name, now stilled at the bottom of this watery grave. 'Twere I truly charmed, I'd curse their descendants till kingdom come. But these pale lips can only drink of the Savior's blood and hope for celestial rest. My drowned eyes fixed ever skyward. It's a wonderful piece. It's so well written. You know, Richard does have a great way of writing. And this is probably one of the shorter pieces I've seen of his. And I think that he had enough fact, but not too much. And it made it very... I don't know, palatable, I think, in some ways. His AN kind of told the tale, within the tale. Because, you know, you're reading it and you're going, oh, and you're following it. Yeah, but he kind of straightened out anyone's thinking. If there was any doubt in your mind or question as to what was going on, this was it. So I think that he did a fine job. And thank you, Richard, very much for sharing. It's a great, great piece. And again, you know, another piece about, you know, all the craziness that went on so long ago. Weird,
yeah.
You know, how people do react.
That is true. It is, yeah, another one. You're right, that delves into the history of of all that craziness. But Northern Phoenix in Late Night Poets says, human history is so violent. Stands to reason we haven't eliminated cruelty yet, especially acts towards women. Disheartening. And yes, that is definitely sad and true. You know, the world, thankfully, we have, you know, acts of kindness that have happened throughout history. But, you know, it's cruelty, you know, especially as I was saying, in the name of, you know, religion has been a part of history. I really like this because, like you, I noticed how it was nicely balanced out. Like, it was informative, but yet it was poetic at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't feel like you were just reading facts. I really liked the visceral imagery and bloody bruise and gagged with oily rags, shoved, now dropped by unseen rough hands. And, you know, it was sad to think of the way these women were just obviously not cared about. They were treated like objects. One of the things I've always found fascinating is how they were always looking for a mark that was supposed to be the devil's teeth. You know,
yeah.
It was supposed to be, you know, and pretty much everyone you know has something like a mole or a freckle, you know. It's just interesting and crazy. I also like where he brings in, either way I stand muted, old claims to my dead husband's land and name. You know, either way I stand muted is especially a powerful line because it brings up the idea, the fact that women in those times did not really have a voice, did not, you know, have a choice.
Right.
And, you know, it was the idea, as he said in his AN, that, you know, the accusations of witchcraft were a common method of getting rid of a woman whose property you could claim once
yep.
she was dead.
I'm with you there. That's exactly it. You know, a lot of it transpired because these women were alone and didn't have anyone to stand up for them or stand with them. And, you know, they robbed them. They murdered them and robbed them, you know, right. And that's the only way to say it, you know. Oh, well,
Absolutely. Let's
call her a witch and we'll hang her and we'll take whatever belonged to her. You know, people became rich off of this process and it's sad. It's very sad. Like history is cruel. A lot of it is anyway, not all of it, but
yeah.
A lot of it, you know, and people got away with it.
Yeah.
They just got away with it. It's amazing.
Sad, but true. I mean, and you know, there were multiple reasons that obviously was one of them. Sometimes it was like, you know, like I listened to the audiobook of The Witches by, can't remember the author, Stacy something, but it's actual like the true story of the Salem witch trials. And I mean, there were reasons anywhere from, you know, like just simply wanting revenge or not being happy with someone, or, you know, this example in Richard's poem of wanting somebody's land. There also was, and sometimes, you know, people accused somebody just simply because, like, I don't know about all the trials, but in the Salem witch trial, it was realized later that a lot of people jumped to blaming, like, accusing somebody else, like their neighbor, just so if somebody else accused them, they wouldn't get tried because they didn't speak up sooner. So, fear and has played a big part in controlling people throughout history. And I think, honestly, fear oftentimes is what leads to violence.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Greed and fear, two of the biggest motivators.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sad. It's sad.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
To me,
and,
that, scarier than any William Peter Blatty or Stephen King, etc. Must be the one you were talking about, Pam.
Yes. I remember the author's first name is Stacy, but I'm blanking out on her last name. But yes, definitely. Because it was based on reality, it is infinitely scarier.
It is.
You know.
I get it.
Well, up next we have Not All Witches Are Bad by Jenny the Deep. Tell me, my little girl, why dost thou hate us witches? Why are thee convinced we're all bad? Thou art my world, don't let it burn. Born my princess, but also a witch. We're surrounded by hypocritical humans, burning us at the stake, condemning us, yet on Halloween, it's us they worship. Ugly is this judgmental society. So with this necklace made of rope, I have blessed with a protection spell, thou will be safe from human hostility. I need thee to see, to truly understand. I am a good witch as well as thou, Mom. Not all of us are bad or here to curse thee. I'm here to protect thou from all harmful hands. End poem. And Jean, your thoughts?
It's a nice write by Jenny. You know, I like how she starts this out. Tell me, my little girl, why dost thou hate us witches? Why are thee convinced we are all bad? Thou art my world. Don't let it burn. I thought that was a great intro line on this, and well done piece. Here, born my princess, but also a witch. We're surrounded by hypocritical humans, burning us at the stake, condemning us. Yet on Halloween, it's us they worship. You know, I think it was, I think it was a good piece, and I like the way that Jenny wrote this. I like the use of the old language, and you know, her prompt that she took. There was two of them side by side, and one is, we are the daughters of the witches you could not burn, you know, and the other one is, we are the granddaughters of the witches you could not burn. And, you know, yes, because if they really believed they were killing off all the witches, you know, they didn't get them all. I'm just saying.
Yep, exactly.
I liked her AN. It says, based on a true story, when my daughter told me she hated witches, thinking all were evil, I came up with how I'm a good witch, like in Oz. Also inspired by the movie Practical Magic in an archaic attempt. So, you know, I just think it was good. I think the language helped this piece along. I think it added to the feel of the piece. So nice job, Jenny, and thanks for sharing. Very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that this stemmed in part from a conversation with her daughter and, you know, offering the insurance that, no, not all witches are wicked. That's part of the mythology of it. And I like that she spoke in the voice of a witch who was a mother who wanted to, who truly loved and wanted to protect her own child, not only from physical harm, but the judgment of society. I thought it was a great take on the chosen prompt. I do like the line, born a princess, but also a witch. Because, you know, one of the quotes also brought in, one of the quotes was, in a world of princesses,
be a witch.
Yes, but I thought that line was nice because saying, you know what, you can be both.
So there
you go. And I also really liked the stanza that says, ugly is this judgmental society, so with this necklace made of rope, I have blessed with a protection spell, thou will be safe from human hostility. I think the mother's heart really comes through in that one. So wonderful, nice. Right? And very well done.
You go, Northern Phoenix. She said, my mom is a witch too, the stubborn kind. Yes. I've been called a witch a few times in my life as well. Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Yep.
I've been called many things in my lifetime, but I'll own up to being a witch if that's what they want me to be. You know, it's not, to me, that, to me, it's just someone who has their feet on the earth, you know, in the way life is. So I look at it a whole different way. I'm not turning people into frogs. I'm casting evil spells and, you know, not making up potions and, you know. Although I do have a cauldron and I cook every Sunday, faithfully.
There you go. That chicken noodle soup and all that other magical stuff.
That's right. That's right. Yep. That's a cure-all, you know. That's good stuff, that chicken noodle.
It really is.
Yep.
It really is. When I talk about witchcraft, you know.
Yes.
Mom told me chicken noodle soup. There you go.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
And up next, we have Witch Hunting by Nick Baker. And go ahead, please, Gene, and give that a read for us.
I'll be happy to. Witch Hunting by Nick Baker. On a cloudy day in Norfolk, when the crops had fallen short, came calling a tall gentleman of the proud, upstanding sort. And his peasant band with their pitchforks raised, and their voices harsh and their wits ablaze, to find a heathen witch and strip her bare without a stitch. And each called out in turn, "Tonight the witch shall burn, tonight the witch shall burn." On a stormy day in Durham, when the floods had taken hold, came calling a tall gentleman, so noble and so bold, with his peasant band with their torches high and their rhymes against the evil eye, to find the heathen hag and cast her down on cobbled flag. And as they cast her down, they cried, "Tonight she'll drown, tonight the witch shall drown." On a chilly night in Salem, when the fevers did their worst, came calling a tall gentleman to visit the accursed. With his own God-fearing inner clan, so pure, so clean, so Puritan, to find the devil's whore, that she might fornicate no more. And so their voices rang, "Tonight she'll hang, she'll hang, she'll hang, tonight the witch shall hang." On a pitch-dark night in Samhain, when the woods are calm and still, there sits a hidden sisterhood who gazed down from the hill. And their verses rhyme and their cauldron stirs while the village sleeps on unaware of any incantation. And amid the midnight celebration, the sisters all confide, "Tonight the witch shall ride, shall ride. Tonight the witch shall ride." End poem. I like it.
Me too. Great read there, Jean. You know, it's always so wonderful. It's such a treat this time of year to get one of Nick Baker's story right.
Yes.
And I know he had responded to somebody who had commented that he did these stories so well. He said, "Many things. At this time of year, they seem to write themselves. This year, I didn't feel that inspired at first." So I'm glad to see that Lauren's contest and the topic of witches inspired him to bring out that Halloween or that Samhain muse to offer this up. And great rhyme and flow, wonderful use of repetition to create a great lyrical quality. I really liked how this poem it's brilliant storytelling, but it's also an excellent write on the obsessive Puritan hunt for the witch. And I think that especially comes through in with his own God-fearing inner clan, so pure, so clean, so Puritan, to find the devil's whore that she might fornicate no more. And so their voices rang, "Tonight she'll hang, she'll hang, she'll hang. Tonight the witch shall hang." And the repetition works really well because you feel as if it's the voice of the crowd with, you know, the rope and the pitchforks and the torches, you know, looking for, hunting down the witch. Great ending to this also with the... And amid the midnight celebration, the sisters all confide, "Tonight the witch shall ride, tonight the witch shall ride." I mean, it's just definitely brilliant, right, all the way through that it has that classic element of a Halloween poem, and at the same time, like I said, really looks at the element of the mob mentality of the Puritans. So excellent.
Absolutely.
Write and very well done. And yes, your thoughts, Dean?
You know, I thought this was an excellent piece by Nick, and he never disappoints. I only see Nick come out around Halloween every year. I'm sure he writes during the year, but I guess that's when he kind of comes into our contest with his wonderful dark rites. I really like the form he used in the piece. He touched on so many of the ways the witches were eliminated, let me put in shaking my head. But I loved his final stanzas. On a pitch dark night in Samhain, when the woods were calm and still, there sits a hidden sisterhood who gazed down from the hill. And their verses rhyme and their cauldron stirs while the village sleeps on unaware of any incantation. And amid the midnight celebration, the sisters all confide, tonight the witch shall ride, tonight the witch shall ride. I thought that was great. I loved each one of the ending stanzas where they had, where he had, you know, tonight the witch shall hang, you know, tonight the witch will drown, tonight the witch will, you know, shall burn. And I loved how the witches took it back in the end, and tonight the witch shall ride. I loved the way he did that. And yeah, it was a great piece. So thank you so much, Nick, for sharing with us. And I look forward to seeing you again next year. If not, later
absolutely.
On in the week. Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
I saw his
you
name in my
Facebook. If I remember right, Nick has a YouTube channel where he records his stories and poems.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, you got to hunt that up for me if you can. I got to find it somewhere.
Well, I will. I will. I'll have to make sure. It's been a while, but I'll have to make sure I'm right. And if I am, I will definitely send you the
link. I love that. Thanks, Pam. That's great.
Yeah, no problem. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go ahead and put my poem up next that was written for this topic. And, of course, I'm just assuming that you'll go straight into leading yourself into commenting. Or you know, you might have Eugene comment.
Okay, now, run up and ask me one more time because I kind of missed the beginning of that. I was getting ready to say something in the room. I'm sorry. My brain's in one.
Oh, no problem. I said, I'm going to put my poem up next,
okay.
And I'm going to assume that you'll go straight into leading yourself into commenting.
Yes, I will.
Or you could have Eugene comment.
I think I'll ask Eugene to comment, and then we'll see if you want to comment. No, I'm only kidding. Okay, we're ready when you are. She's funny.
All right. This is the lonely figure wandering. She saunters through All Hallows' Eve, looking for those who dare believe in magical elements of earth and air, where goblins play both truth and dare. The fullest moon is hanging bright in a sky of fanning flames. She speaks to every wandering spirit, knowing each of them by name. She is a lady of lonely figure, cut from the blackest cloth. She's calling forth the magic fire as the light brings summons to the moth. She speaks of things not understood by the cautious children of daylight, for they can never comprehend the conjuring within this night. The bare branches of the maple tree reach forth like skeletal arms, and every sense within her nerves knows the dangers and the charms. Mysticism and horror where the daemons come to play and capture those whose weakened will serenades them all to stray. She is a crone with knowledge of herbs and nature's powers. She is a lady of divination that claims the midnight hours. They use her gift for their gain, those men of darkest greed. And when she is no use to them, they'll watch her burn and bleed and comb.
Great. Great read, Pam. And what a great piece. Eugene, would you like to comment on this?
Yeah, I'll comment on this.
Oh, my God, he's actually here. Did you hear that? Oh, my gosh. Oh, never mind. He wandered off again. See how he is.
He got distracted.
Yeah. Doesn't take much for him. Yeah, I really like this. I like how you started this off. She saunters through All Hallows' Eve, looking for those who dare believe in magical elements of earth and air, where goblins play both truce and dare. It was such a neat lead-in for this because, you know, it sets the mood right there, you know. The fullest moon is hanging bright in a sky of fanning flames. She speaks to every wandering spirit, knowing each of them by name. Ah, see, she's got a lot happening here. But I think that she really, this character builds as you go down. She speaks of things not understood by the cautious children of daylight, for they can never comprehend the conjuring within this night. You know, and that goes on about mysticism and horror, where the demons come to play and capture those who weakened wills, serenades them all to stray. It's just great. I mean, I'm liking each stanza. I like, you know, how they all pull together, you know, because obviously I'm skipping, you know, a stanza here and a stanza there. But she is a crone with knowledge of herbs and nature's powers. She is a lady of divination that claims the midnight hours. They use her gift for their gain, those men of darkest greed. And when she is no use to them, they'll watch her burn and bleed. So, yeah, I mean, it's, wow. I think you hit a lot on this, but you took a lighter road than some of the others, which, well, I shouldn't say lighter. I mean, your ending was like kind of bam, you know, hit you in the head kind of thing. But I think that your story throughout each one of these stanzas just really built something that was, it was presented in a little bit of a softer fashion. And really pointed out the light sides of the witch, you know, in all the thoughts and what she does and, you know, what her her knowledge is and some things. You know, I do love the one about the wandering spirit, knowing each of them by name. I do like that. I thought that was good because it gives her that God, I hate when I do that. I just draw a blank. But it gives her that insight of being a, and I'm using my air quotes here, witch, you know, where she's a little deeper than just, yeah, well, you know, it's a little deeper than her just making up, you know, some herbs and things and healing people and what have you. It gives her that little bit more of a depth into maybe something a little more occult. But it's not in a, it doesn't come off as a nasty or malicious kind of character. And I think that's what I like because that's what I mean by softer. It's like not malicious. It's not evil. It's not mean. You know, she's not eating kids or, you know, stealing kids or baking kids or, you know, any of that crazy stuff. But then when you get down to the end, you know, the crone with the knowledge, they use her gift for their gain. Those men of darkest greed. And there we are again with greed. And when she is no use to them, they'll watch her burn and bleed. And, you know, basically that's what we talked about in that other poem. You know, it's like, yep, we're going to get what we can from her. We're going to take what we can from her. You know, if she can heal my daughter, that's fine, but then we're gonna hang her so I can have her house later, you know? That sounds silly, I
guess. Exactly.
But it is true. Exactly. I mean, and I think that, I think you did you did a good job expressing that throughout the piece. You gave her some depth of character and some, you know, where she walked that fine line between, you know, just being an herbalist on, you know, on this side, but she knew the spirits on the other side. So you gave her a soul that kind of touched on both sides. And I like that about it. And I thought that was really well done. So excellent job. What do you want to tell us about your poem? Come on, tell me something.
Well, I really like your comment observations because, yeah, you know, at first I thought about changing the ending because I thought, well, maybe that's just a little too hard, like a sudden right turn. But then I thought, you know, that's kind of what I wanted because, you know,
right.
I did want to offer up a gentler perspective of a woman who not only knew about powers within nature, but had this connection to the spirit realm, to the realm that's beyond the veil. But I also wanted to bring in the reality of the witch hunt, which, as you were saying, is, you know, the ending, you know, when the woman who is, and air quote, a witch is of no more use, you know. And I'm just, I don't know what it is about this time of year. I think pretty much every poem I've written so far for LNP Halloween week has been a rhyming poem. You know, there's just something about this time of year that
it puts a spell on you.
And it's not like a rule, obviously, but I just find myself drawn to writing in rhyme when I'm writing these, you know, wicked, wonderful tales of witchcraft and goblins and ghouls. So.
I'm telling you, Halloween, it put a spell on you.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does.
There's something about it. I think in Halloween time, it kind of brings out that rhymey thing because, you know, you get to, it's a neat way of expressing it. It's kind of like, almost like a chant or almost like a spell in some sorts where when it rhymes, it just flows better. And, you know, when you watch any of the crazy, you know, movies or what have you, you know, you hear all that rhyming stuff in the background, you know, like when the witches cast a spell, there's always, you know, some rhyme to it. And I kind of think that somewhere in the back of our minds that stays and it kind of entices us to go that direction. I could be wrong, but when you think about it, there's probably a little bit of truth there. And, you know, it's not a conscious thing, but it definitely something sits in the back of your mind, like, you know, abracadabra, zippity-doo, you know, this is something going to come out and you're going to be through, you know, one of them silly things. So I think, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. But
I think that's a great observation, and I could totally see that being right. Very cool. Well, up next we have The Enchanting Tale of the Witch by E.J. Estes. And go ahead, please, Gene, and give that a read for us.
Okie dokie. Let me see if I can get it on my window here. No. What's up with this thing? Okay, let me... E.J. Estes. Okay. Here we go. I got to put it up because I couldn't find it. The Enchanting Tale of a Witch by E.J. Estes. In a dark and misty wood where secrets lie, lives a witch with magic that can touch the sky. With a cauldron bubbling and a cackle so wild, she casts her spells with a mischievous smile. Her broomstick so sleek it glides through the night as she soars through the air, a mystical sight. Her black cat by her side, eyes shining bright. Together they wander under the moon's soft light. With a flick of her wand, she brews potions rare, mixing herbs and whispers with utmost care. She weaves enchantments both wicked and kind, harnessing the power of her ancient mind. But beware, my friend, for this witch is not all bad. She has a heart that's not entirely mad. She helps lost souls find their way back home and protects the innocent from darkness that roams. So next time you see a witch flying high, remember, there's more to her than meets the eye. She may be mysterious and a little bit strange, but her magic holds a world full of wonder and change. End poem. Woo-hoo.
Great read, Jean. Again, we have another wonderful poem. I really thought that's a great rhyme and wonderful line on a witch who have a lot of personality. You know, to me, this wasn't just about one witch, even though, you know, it may have technically been. It was like when she says, where is this? When she writes, she weaves enchantments both wicked and kind, harnessing the power of her ancient mind. And even when in the poem it says she casts her spells with a mischievous smile. I like the use of mischievous smile and spells both, you know, wicked and kind, because to me it speaks on the idea that what gets put into the magic used or the knowledge, not even necessarily magic, but the knowledge used really has to do with the individual person. And all of us, you know, have a good side and a bad side, mischievous side. And really, you know, there could be evil witches out there because, let's face it, there are evil people out there. And there will be good witches out there because, yes, there are, even though sometimes it's hard to believe in a world of such violence, greed, and cruelty, there is good people out there. I really also like the lines, with a flick of her wand, she brews potions rare, mixing herbs and whispers with utmost care. And we have talked about the use of herbs and nature and medicinal plants. But also, you know, words themselves were known to be a source of power. And so I like that she brings that in. So wonderful, right, by E.J. Estes. I keep saying she, but I guess I shouldn't assume. I don't know for sure. But anyways, a wonderful write by them. And new name to me, so I look forward to reading more of them. And I look forward to hopefully they'll be inspired to write for more of our shows. So very
Absolutely.
Yes, and your thoughts, Jean?
You know, I thought this was a great piece. I was trying to pick up the stanza or so that I really hit the notes for me. And of course, I was like looking and I'm going, wait. But I think I grabbed two, but I think I really want this one. Beware, my friend, for this witch is not all bad. She has a heart that's not entirely mad. She helps lost souls find their way back home and protects the innocent from darkness that roams. So next time you see a witch flying high, remember there's more to her than meets the eye. She may be mysterious and a little bit strange, but her magic holds a world of wonder and change. I like the last two stanzas of this very much. Very much. I think that it was just really well written and a great share. So thank you so much, EJ Estes. Nice piece. Great work.
Absolutely. Great comment. And up next we have Bewitching Hour by Liquid Mind Forever. Breathe breathless fire, con their flesh, crawl across goosebumped breasts. Inside Prince of Darkness crash, press ruthless hornet's nest, witches eyeballs ill at rest, quest October's martyrs ghouls at fest, witches daughters cloven delight, gather round first circle tonight, witches daughters cloven delight, Halloween blood sorceress first rite, black doom moons mouths apart invite, cackling crones, crackling bones, thighs of maidens close in and tight, seal this night, virgin stones, magic brews, cauldrons and craves, blaze, as new moon's black rim tears new phase, magic brews, cauldron and craves, magic brews, cauldron and craves, cauldrons and craves, white witches solidify, amaze. Screeches, yowls, howling, foulish mouths, succulent blood, thirst, zest, conquest, request, all guests with jaws, swallow their first, their best, huntress besmirched, search youth's first taste, bewitching each child, each one faced, huntress besmirched, Halloween hour, witches break haste, end poem. And your thoughts, Dean?
You know, this is a good piece by Deborah. I looked at her Anna, and you know, underneath of the link to the thing, it says "for the hell of it." Just made me chuckle.
I like that.
Yeah, I like how she started this off. Breathe breathless fire upon their flesh, crawl across goosebumped breasts. Inside Prince of Darkness's crash, press ruthless hornet's nest. Witches' eyeballs ill at rest, quest October martyrs, ghouls at fest, witches' daughters, cloven delight, gather round for a circle tonight, witches' daughters, cloven delight, Halloween blood, sorceress first rite. I think that was a great lead-in for this. It kind of brought Halloween into perspective, or Samhain, or whichever issue, wherever she was heading for this, whatever the ritual was. And I have to think it was Samhain. She really brought it all together in just that first stanza, and then went down from there. And I think that it just, you know, it was just very well written. It had almost an authentic feel to it. And that in itself was like pretty decent, you know. She says a variation on a Trajan refrain. So good job. Nice work, Deborah, and thanks for sharing, as always.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always thankful for when Deborah's inspired, because she does give us some quality work.
She does.
And great comments, Eugene. Yeah. You know, I love the variation on the Trajan refrain works so well with the rhyme, the inner and end rhyme, mm-hmm. the flow. Her imagery and metaphors is great. And I do get that this does have the spirit of Samhain to it, I think, as you were mentioning. That kind of celebration. I like how it speaks on the darkness of sacrifices made. But I like how she uses the word daughters. I thought this worked really well. You know, it was October martyrs, ghouls at fest, witches, daughters, cloven delight. Gather around first circle tonight, witches, daughters, cloven delight. Halloween blood, sorceress, first right. And you know, when she says, you know, sorceress, first right, you know, this R-I-T-E, you think of the idea of a young sorceress or young witch learning what the generations, the magic that the generations before her have learned. And so great use of sound words like screeches, yowls, and howling, foulish mouths, succulent blood, thirsty zest. Great visceral imagery. And I feel like this has kind of a fast pace to it. Like you can imagine the witches dancing around the fire while this poem is being read. And I think that really adds to the atmosphere of it. So
absolutely.
Great, right. Well, now we are going to go ahead. We are done with the rights from that contest. So thank you, Lawrence. I hope for running that contest. I hope you feel better soon. We will be moving on to carryovers from the Samhain contest, which was for the Delving the Depths of Darkness show. And now we're going to go ahead and delve into those. So first up, we have Black Flames by Blue Leader One. And go ahead, please, Gene, and give that a read.
I will in about, well, a few seconds. I'm trying to correct
few
something.
Few seconds. All right, no problem.
Okay, don't time it. Don't time me. Don't time
me. I'm not. I would like to say that it's been good to see both Robbie and Northern Phoenix hanging out on the board tonight in Late Night Poets. I really appreciate them both and their comments they've been making in the room. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm with you, Pam. I like to see people over there having a good time and having a good conversation. Okay, I'm ready. I'm sorry. I had to like correct something. Okay, this is called Black Flames by Blue Leader One. I am obsidian, the darkness, the night sky, smoking mirror, the taste of bitter in the holy wine, the cold, the absolute, the lord of abnegation, the ruler of the underworld, the owner of the earth and heaven. It is I that engineered the heat, death of the universe. I murdered creation. I commanded the world's end, even as it was being born. I am the death bringer, the freedom bringer, because death is freedom. Death cures all illnesses. Death lifts all curses. Death releases all burdens, erases all debts. Death is not biased or bigoted. Passes no judgments or punishments. Death is peace. Only death is sure. Only darkness is permanent. You, don't be misled by dead saints and gospel masters. Be guided by me, and I'll bring about your true happiness. All the kingdoms of the earth, their past, their glory, their sin, because sin is fun. Take my hands, I'll lead along the left-hand path to your place amongst the black flames of the eternal fire. End poem.
Great read there, Gene. And what a wonderful, dark and haunting rite. I like the voice he chose in this and how it speaks on the idea of temptation. You know, I thought it was a brilliant dark rite on the voice of darkness, which guides the shadows in the mind. I really like the lines, I am the death bringer, the freedom bringer, because death is freedom. You know, there's something about this rite. I was thinking as I was reading it earlier that, you know, it's one I think Robert M. would really enjoy and appreciate. You know,
right.
With its undertone of despair and the voice of death, which speaks as one that creates freedom and balance. But I like the lines all the way through, but a couple of my favorite parts were this. The cold, the absolute, the lord of the abnegation, the ruler of the underworld, the owner of earth and heaven. And also, only death is sure, only darkness is permanent. You don't be misled by dead saints and Godspell masters. You know, wonderful lines all the way through on the voices that lead one into temptation. And very well done. And your thoughts, Gene?
You know, I thought this was a dark piece, well written. I picked it up here. It is I that engineered the heat death of the universe. I murdered creation. I commanded the world's end, even as it was being born. I am the death bringer, the freedom bringer, because death is freedom. Death cures all illnesses. Death lifts all curses. Death releases all burdens and erases all debts. Death is not biased or bigoted, passes no judgments or punishments. This piece was incredibly dark in my eyes, you know, and I think that it was done so in a great way. I think it was, the darkness was so well expressed throughout. The other pieces were good as well, you know, like I am obsidian. I mean, what a way to start the piece alone. It's just really well done and expressed. And I don't know how else to put it. Do I, you know, dance in the light of it? No. Do I dance in the darkness of it? No. But I think it was absolutely well done. So great piece. And thanks for sharing Blue Leader One.
Absolutely.
Yep, yep.
Absolutely. Great observations, Gene. And up next, we have Samhain's Eve by Ritalik. And she was nice enough to supply us with a recording. So whenever you're ready, Jean.
You got it, girl. Here we go.
Samhain's Eve by Darien Ritalik. In the heart of the present, here I stand. My name is Fiona, from Celt, an ancient land. I remember the rituals and the sacred rites on Samhain's Eve under the moonlight. The wheel of time turned, offerings laid for fairies and spirits in moonlight laid. 3 days and 3 nights of reverence and mirth, honoring the cycle of death and rebirth. We dressed as animals, so wild and so free, shapes shifting in the moonlight's dazzling mystery. Lady Gwyn roamed headless and white, a spectral vision in the cold spiritual night. The Jali Han rode on flame-eyed steeds, harborings of fate in performing dark deeds. The world was alive, the magic unfolds in the ancient time in the older world. Now I'm Dorian in this modern age, a world of technology, social media, and rage. The rituals of old seem lost and forgotten, and in the absence something has gone rotten. I've lost the magic, the faith in the connection, in pursuit of progress and full perfection. The world seems colder, crueler, and adrift as we yearn for meaning, the spiritual lift. Oh, to return to Samhain's night, to rekindle the rituals and chant back the light, trace back our roots and honor the gods, restoring the balance and making it last. For in forgetting true meaning of Samhain's worlds collide, the seen and unseen walking side by side. Though times have changed and Halloween's fun, the spirit of Samhain is never to be gone.
Wow.
Great reading, great Retallick. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is appreciated. I love this tale told and how she gave her character's name, like Fiona and Lady Gwyn. And I like the Lady Gwyn roamed headless and white, a spectral vision in the cold spiritual night. But I thought this was a great write on the ancient ways of Samhain and the belief that it is a time when the veil between the physical world and the spiritual world becomes thinner, and therefore we're able to connect with and speak to our dead ancestors. I really particularly also like where she says, oh, to return to Samhain's night, to rekindle the rituals, chant back the light, trace back our roots to honor the gods, restoring the balance and making it last, for in forgetting true meaning of Samhain, worlds collide. You know, I like how she brings up the idea that, it has been forgotten what the original purpose of those celebrations and those beliefs were. So I like that the lines where she says, trace back our roots, you know, the idea of, you know, going back in history, retracing what was once known by our ancestors. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
My goodness, I have a ton of thoughts. And it's hard. It's really hard because I'm like, oh, how am I going to do this? I loved up in the beginning, she says, I thought it was a fabulous work and a wonderful audio. But I picked up here, in the heart of the present, here I stand. My name is Fiona from Celt and ancient land. I remember the rituals, the sacred rites on Samhain Eve under the moonlight. Now, I picked up the next stanza under that because I really felt they went well together. But then when you get part of the way down, and this is a show of timelessness. The world was alive, the magic unfurled in an ancient time in that older world. Now I am Dorian in this modern age, a world of technology, social media, and rage. It's as if... over that course of years, you know, it shows a rebirth as someone else throughout the years. You know, God knows who came between Fiona and Dorian, you know, but there's two points of reference here. And one, my name is Fiona, and the next one, now I am Dorian. And it's not a matter of, like, I changed my name yesterday, you know, and I went from this. No, we're talking about the old world. You know, I remember the ritual, the sacred rites on Samhain Eve under the moonlight. The wheel of time turned, offerings laid for fairies and spirits in moonlight glade. 3 days and three nights of reverence and mirth, honoring the cycle of death and rebirth. Then under the Dorian lines, as the rituals of old seem lost and forgotten, and in their absence something has gone rotten. We've lost the magic, the faith, and the connection in pursuit of progress and flawed perfection. The world seems colder, crueler, and adrift as we yearn for meaning, a spiritual lift. I think it represents timelessness of the sister, of the witch, of the, I shouldn't use the word witch because that's not what this is about here. But it's rebirth. It's, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how I want to say it, but I think I pointed it out where my mind was with this. And I thought it was really clever and well done. It was beautiful audio, and I think it was really well expressed, and I really enjoyed it. So that's what I'm going to say. You know, it just was wonderful. So
I like that. I like that. Great observation. And yes, you're right. It does speak on the timelessness and the connection of this sisterhood of a Samhain. So
yeah,
very true. Very cool. Well, up next we have Samhain's Dream by Turrindil, and we also have a recording for that one.
I got it. Here we go.
Samhain's Dream by Turrindil. Shall I call you Silver Moon? Shall I call you Forest Heart? Song of Wolf, I name you too. She who dances in the dark. From the river's other side, she came to me at night. She came to me at summer's end, in Samhain's dimming light. You can call me Silver Moon. You can call me Forest Heart. Song of Wolf, my name is too. She who dances in the dark. To the river's other side, she carried me at night, in the forest's deepest dream, far away from drowsing light. But my truest, deepest name can't be catched by words or thought. You can feel it when I dance. You can sense it when I sing. In the essential, wordless song, sung with voices wild and shrill. On the river's other side, she danced for me at night, and sang for me a wordless song, in the dark, the only light. Don't you try to catch my hand, don't you try to make me thine. I will always run and escape if you will try. You can only dance with me, sing with me if you desire. Leave your thoughts and simply burn like a bonfire in the night. From the river's other side, back I came at night. Back I came at Samhain's end, into winter's dawning light.
Wow.
Wonderful, yeah. Absolutely wonderful read and write, Turrindil. Another new name for me. I look forward to reading more of them and hope they're inspired for future shows. I have to say, he has a wonderful reading voice, which offers up a great presentation. Wonderful rhyme and flow, brilliant imagery and storytelling. I like how this speaks on the fleeting time that the people have together under the Samhain moon. I felt there was a nice, delicate touch of sensuality, but also of romanticism to this that works really well. And I think I like the interaction, between the characters. You can call me Silver Moon. You can call me Forest Heart. Sing Song of Wolf, my name is too, She Who Dances in the Dark. I feel like, you know, this is the idea, there's such a mythological feel to it, of the idea of a man who comes across a spirit or a woodland nymph, you know, and is seduced by the music, the sound of her song and her dancing. I also like how there's almost a playfulness to me, but in such an elegant way, where he writes, "Don't you try to catch my hand, don't you try to move me thine. I will always, always run and escape if you will try." So I like how that speaks in the idea of you may admire me, but don't try to own me. I thought this had a nice, you know, voice to it as far as the writing itself goes, and very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
Oh, I thought this was a wonderful write. I thought it was beautifully written. And I have to say, you know, his voice was perfect. I mean, sounds silly because he wrote it, but his voice was perfect for this piece. It lent a certain mystery. I don't know if mystery is really the right word, but it lent a certain feel to it. And I loved that, you know, but I picked these two stanzas, and I think that it was funny because I was like looking, do I like all the ones that are italicized? Do I like all the ones that aren't? You know, because I thought they spoke two different ways, and I thought that they were pretty amazing. And I love the two voices back and forth with one another. So I really respect that because I love when that's done right. But here's where I picked up. "But my truest, deepest name can't be catched by words or thought. You can feel it when I dance. You can sense it when I sing. In this sensual, wordless song, sung with voices wild and shrill. Don't you try to catch my hand. Don't you try to make me thine. I will always, always run and escape if you will try. You can only dance with me, sing with me if you desire. Leave your thoughts and simply burn like a bonfire in the night." I like that. And, you know, as you said, Pam, it's like, don't try and own me. You know, you can dance with me, you can sing with me, but I don't belong to you. And I think that I thought that was a neat concept there. And I really did, the other voice I liked as well. You know, "From the river's other side, back I came at night. Back I came at Samhain's end into winter's dawning light." I don't know. I just really like this whole piece. And I like the way that he pulled it together. And, it was wonderful. So thank you so much, Tarndale. And, yes, it's a new name to me as well, Pam. And I really hope to see more of him as time goes by. So excellent work. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. All right. Our next poem is A Samhain Tale by Fran Marie, and it goes like this. "Samhain spirits raised from secret shadows of the past to play games of darkness with you, their prey, summoned by the unholy, the unseen and unclean, tainting the night air black. Yes, evil is alive tonight. It writes the fate of all who dare to tempt the forces with fierce fight. A manic moon grins his sardonic smile, knowing damn well what will wield death as mere mortal men awake to meet the midnight winds prodding, pounding, darkened pathways as the Samhain Eve begins. Yes, evil is about tonight. Its hands reach out in darkness to grip, to grab, engage you with fright. Trees sway to eerie whistling sounds as winds wrap boughs and bind, and a starless sky stands blind, helping no one in sight. Yes, evil cannot die tonight. My cauldron stirs, telling this Samhain tale true. By tonight's black light, beware, they're coming for you." End poem. And your thoughts, Jean?
You know, the piece is really good. It really is. I was trying to figure out where I would ever pick up. Samhain spirits raised from secret shadows of the past to play games of darkness with you, their prey. Summoned by the unholy, the unseen, and unclean, tainting the night air black. Yes, evil is alive tonight. It writes the fate of all who dare to tempt the forces with fierce fight. It was a nicely rhymed piece, and it had a certain feel to it. Like, it had a vibe to it when you read it, and it just kind of held you there in the, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but just in that space. You know, it didn't really take you anywhere else. It just held you there and expressed itself. That sounds so silly. But it was a great piece. I like the ending. My cauldron stirs, telling the Samhain tale true. By tonight's black light, beware, they're coming for you. Ooh, that'll give you a nasty turn, won't it? But I think it really was well done. I think there was a lot of wonderful imagery in it. And, the feelings were well expressed in it. So nice job, Fran Marie, and thanks for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like Fran Marie's writing. She especially does good on dark writing. And I think this one is delightfully wicked in the way that it's almost like a classic horror story that fits so well with this time of year, and brilliant use of imagery. I really did like how she writes on a night filled with evil and terror. And because you think about the idea of a night where the veil between the living and dead is thin, you know, it's not just necessarily the good dead, you know, the good
right.
spirits are going to come through. There are going to be things of evil and terror. I really like the phrase where she says, a manic moon grins his sardonic smile, knowing damn well what will wheel death. As mere mortal men awake to meet the midnight winds prodding, pounding. I really liked how she brings the sound and the force of the midnight winds, and also some great use of alliteration, you know. And I also really like the imagery of trees sway to eerie whistling sounds as wind wraps boughs and vines. You know, oftentimes it is that blowing wind through the trees that really captures the imagination, which brings the fright, you know.
Absolutely.
So, I thought I'm not going to try to rush through another poem and comment.
Absolutely.
So we'll have carryovers for another show, and we'll let people know what show they'll be on when we know. And that will be Jesna Sajan, Pretty Wire, and I guess that's it. Oh, and my poem. But I'm not too worried about myself. But great show tonight, Jean. Thank you so much for all you do, and of course for
you too,
for
fam.
Out.
You did a great job tonight.
Thank you.
Wonderful poetry.
Thank
great,
you.
Great hosting, and it was fun to be here. And Laurent, you better hurry up and get yourself feeling better, or
that's,
we're gonna have to raise
right.
pain. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, hope to see you soon, Laurent. And Pam, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
It was.
Thank you, Northern Phoenix, and thank you, Robbie. Hope to see you again soon. I hope everyone enjoys the show, or enjoyed the show, or will enjoy the archives later. Thank you so much, and have a great night. Yip, yip.